case for argument this morning is Graham against a party to be named momentarily. It keeps changing its name. Mr. Salem.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Maurice Salem.
You don't happen to know who the defendant is, do you?
It's Singular Wireless is the defendant.
Singular Wireless, when you brought the lawsuit, you actually sued it as Singular Wireless Corporation, which, so far as I know, has never existed.
We corrected that and we put Singular Wireless Limited Liability, a quote company.
Is it not? Well, it's AT&T something now. Is it AT&T Mobility LLC, AT&T Incorporated?
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe opposing counsel can clear that up.
I will ask Ms. Abrahams who her client is. Anyway, please proceed.
Thank you. Your Honor, this case was dismissed on a motion for summary judgment, and at the same time the decision was rendered in the district court, the Supreme Court rendered the decision Burlington North versus White. In Burlington North, Your Honors, the Supreme Court changed the standard for a retaliatory claim. They changed it from materially adverse change to...
Change the standard. It adopted this circuit's existing standard.
Yes, Your Honor. My point is all legal...
What's the change? Supreme Court says to the Seventh Circuit, you got it right. No change in this jurisdiction has occurred.
That's true. They reversed the Sixth Circuit.
Well, there was no change. And what's this argument about?
The point is, Your Honor, that in the record, the supervisor testified in his deposition on page 54, line 20, that he knew about the EEOC charge that Graham brought prior to giving the evaluation. Now, the evaluation is shown in the appendix on page 343 and 127. That evaluation is derogatory. It's worse than Mr. Graham's prior evaluations, which are shown on pages 363 through 367. Also, Your Honor, in the appendix on page 142...
You're now citing a lot of appendix pages that may or may not be helpful. Is there any reason why we shouldn't summarily affirm in this case for your failure to include in your appellate brief one single citation to the record?
Your Honor, in my brief, I cited two cases.
Record,
Mr. Salem.
To the record?
The record.
Your Honor, I cited... I did not.
Contains not a single citation to the record.
Your Honor, violation
of the rules of appellate procedure and of this circuit's rules could not be clearer.
Your Honor, this case was, with respect to the plaintiff, is done on a shoestring budget. I've submitted...
There is no shoestring budget exception to the requirement that people comply with the rules.
Well, Your Honor, I cite it to the appendix.
As you know, with a shoestring budget, you haven't done any legal research. But as you may know, we have said that when a brief is filed without citations to the record, the normal consequence is either summary dismissal or summary affirmance, because we have no obligation to go search the record on our own, and without understanding what's in the record, the appeal cannot possibly succeed.
Your Honor, I've been always citing to the appendix in this, and from now on I'll also cite to the record. But in the appendix, which I've submitted copies to, it's very clear that the plaintiff received a derogatory review. The supervisor knew it was derogatory, and...
You're not addressing my question.
Yes, Your Honor.
My question is, why should we not summarily affirm because your brief fails to cite to the record?
Well, yeah, as I said, I cited to the appendix, and I asked the court
to
refer to
the
appendix.
It doesn't cite to anything. There is not one citation to any place in your statement of facts where we can find any fact.
Your Honor, I've just mentioned the appendix pages here to cite the prior derogatory review and the prior reviews that were not derogatory, that were better. And that's what I asked this court to use to see that, just like in the Burlington case where they changed the employee's position but not salary, the issue should be whether or not a reasonable person will be deterred by the retaliatory act. In this case, a derogatory review is a retaliatory act, Your Honor. I also cited two cases in 1992 and 1987 of the Seventh Circuit that specifically says a derogatory work appraisal review is basis for a retaliatory act, Your Honor. With respect to the discriminatory claims, what I believe the district court erred is that it took the discriminatory claims out of context. It allowed the defendant's counsel to take them out of context. Your Honor, one of the discriminatory claims that opposing counsel believes is the weakest is the one I'd like to address now and put into context. That's the one where the co-worker, Larry Barrett, asked the plaintiff, Graham, not to send them emails throughout the day. Your Honor, if you take that out of context, it's not discriminatory. It's innocent, it's benign. But now if you allow me to put it into context, and you'll see that this is hostile and discriminatory. Now,
Who did they discriminate against? How did they discriminate against him? Was it just him? He's the only guy that couldn't send emails. Everybody else could send them.
Your Honor, he was the only person asked to send emails, identifying his tasks throughout the day to the entire department by his supervisor Coffey and his director Koffenberg. Now, one of the co-workers, Mr. Barrett, asked Graham not to send him emails throughout the day. Now, putting this into context, the derogatory review that he received, which is a retaliatory act, stated in there that Graham doesn't communicate well with the rest of the department. And his supervisor and director asked him to send out these emails, and they received the emails and approved them and did not complain about them. Now, when his coworker wanted him to stop, Graham could not take off the coworker's name out of the general distribution list unless the IT department did it. Graham complained to the company. The company did nothing to Barrett to stop his request. In other words, Graham was forced either to listen to Barrett and reduce the work hostility or listen to his bosses, who gave him a derogatory review after the EEOC charge. Now, Your Honor, my point is this. I believe that the reason most of the discriminatory cases in this district are dismissed is because the defendant's counsel is allowed to take the discriminatory act out of context. Now, this individual, Barrett, who made this request and caused this problem, it was also assigned to a cell site that belongs to Singular. And he was assigned to it on page of the appendix on page 267. His name appears as the person who maintained that site for several months. Now, Your Honors, the site itself is I'm going to show a poster of the site. Now, there may be a dispute whether Barrett wrote this "Kill the Niggers" on this equipment, but there's no dispute that he maintained this site for several months. His name is on the log on Appendix 267. And, Your Honor, the purpose I show this is to show that this was not a small letters in the corner, and also this is an equipment that you will not normally see outside in the public. This is a secured equipment in a locked area that belongs to the company, and it was allowed to remain by Mr. Barrett for several months, and that's not in dispute.
Now, did somebody complain about this? I mean, it's
yes, Your Honor. I'm getting to Mr. Graham's supervisor, Mr. Coffey. In Mr. Coffey's deposition on page 50, line 9, he says that he investigated this and that he says no one was offended by this "Kill the Nigger" sign except Graham. That's the plaintiff. This is his own words in his depositions, Your Honor. This is Coffey.
Would somebody wash it off or do something with it?
Well, later on it was done because Graham complained about it.
Well, that's what I mean. If somebody can complain about it, then they wash it off, I guess.
Correct. But the point is, Your Honor, to look at a discriminatory act in isolation is not right. It's not going to look like a discriminatory act. You have to use the pattern and practice of the individual who did it, and you have to look at it in a broader perspective, and who the individual was and what the past conduct was. The point here is both the supervisor and the individual who was assigned to this were not offended by this and left it. Once Graham was assigned to this case and saw that, he was offended. And according to the supervisor, he was the only one offended. Now, the point is that...
he's the only one that said anything about it. Apparently.
He's the only one who... according to the... Mr. Coffey's testimony is that he was the only one who was offended by the sign "Kill the Niggers." Then it was taken down.
Anybody would look at it could be offended. It's just that I don't know where this is.
Well, it's Mr. Coffey.
You said it was locked up in sort of an isolated place, apparently.
Correct. Only the employees had access to it, Your Honor. So the point is this. We're not saying that Larry Barrett was the one who wrote this. We don't know who wrote it. But we know the record, and we know based on his testimony that there's no dispute. He allowed it to stay for several months because he was assigned to it, Your Honor. I apologize. I didn't reference to the record, but the appendix shows the log on page 272 where it has Larry Barrett's name on it. Mr. Graham took over, and then the complaint.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, this
thank
is a...
Thank you, counsel.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Abrahams.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. I'm Nadine Abrahams.
Ms. Abrahams.
I'm sorry?
Who is your client?
We had filed an amended disclosure statement, and I believe it's AT&T Mobility LLC as contained. There are other individual parties referenced in the amended disclosure statement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. As a preliminary matter, we do agree with this court's questioning with regard to the Mr. Salem's failure to cite to the record. There is no citation to any specific facts in the record. And for that reason, as we stated in our briefs, we believe that this appeal can be dismissed. Regardless of the issues with regard to the appeal, none of the facts that Mr. Salem mentioned today were even in the record, even if the court was to scour the record. With regard to the racial graffiti, those instances, or the one instance that's up on the board, was raised in a 2004 lawsuit before Judge Norgel, which was dismissed and was never brought up or raised in the 2004 or 2005 EEOC charges.
It was appealed, as I understand it, but Mr. Salem filed his notice of appeal approximately 1 year late, and it was dismissed as untimely.
That is correct. And that issue of the racial graffiti was never part of this lawsuit. What is at issue in this lawsuit is whether or not Mr. Graham has identified any materially adverse employment actions or actions that would dissuade a reasonable person in his circumstances from complaining about discrimination. And none of the acts that Mr. Graham has complained of rise to that level. They are the quintessential petty slights and minor annoyances that the court in Burlington Northern and this circuit has identified are not actionable. There's nothing about a coworker's request that he send emails once a day or a purported delay in receiving a laptop computer or a cell phone that would dissuade a person from complaining about discrimination. Instead, what Mr. Graham is asking is that the court view these circumstances in the light of his unusual subjective feelings, which is exactly what the court in Burlington Northern has indicated is not appropriate. For several other reasons, even if Mr. Graham had been able to establish a materially adverse employment action, which we believe he hasn't, the district court's decision should be affirmed because he has failed to identify any similarly situated employees, either non-African-American employees or employees who didn't complain about discrimination, who were treated more favorably. In fact, with regard to specific allegations in the complaint, there is evidence that no employees, regardless of their race or their protected status, were allowed to bring a union representative to non-disciplinary meetings. There's also evidence that Mr. Graham was in fact treated more favorably with regard to training than other individuals. He went first before individuals who had even more seniority than he did. And likewise, with regard to the emails that he is claiming were sent to him inappropriately, those emails were sent to his entire work group. He wasn't singled out or treated any differently in any way based on his race or his protected status. And likewise, we believe Judge Bucklow correctly granted summary judgment because Singular demonstrated that it had legitimate, non-discriminatory, and non-retaliatory reasons for every action that it took with regard to Mr. Graham, and there is no evidence in the record whatsoever that such actions were pretextual or not the real reason. to the extent that Mr. Graham is attempting to raise a hostile work environment, which it appears he may be, there again, Judge Bucklow correctly granted summary judgment because there is nothing, no acts that Mr. Graham identified that were severe or pervasive from the perspective of a reasonable person. And there was no alteration to the terms and conditions of his employment. And there's nothing, all of the actions taken with regard to him were completely race neutral. There's no evidence that they were taken in any way because of his race. And finally, singular, every time any act or complaint was brought to Singular's attention by Mr. Graham, Singular investigated such complaint and took appropriate prompt remedial action. For example, Mr. Graham complained about a label that was placed on a portable cell site that eventually found its way into Mr. Graham's work area. Singular investigated such complaints, reprimanded the employee, and immediately removed the label. It appears that what Mr. Salem is attempting to argue is that this court should apply a continuing violation theory to the hostile work environment claims. As I've previously stated, those claims were either raised in prior EEOC charges, which were not acted upon, or in the lawsuit before Judge Nogle that was dismissed. And it is our position that the entire decision or all the rulings that made by Judge Bucklow should be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.